Your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine...
A very good Thursday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website too, stevevick.com, and absolutely gorgeous. A Thursday that comes on the heels of the draws for the other two big Saturdays in racing. Both Gulfstream and Turfway put together deep and compelling cards, and ended up actually spending a lot of time looking at Turfway, in essence, while we were waiting for Gulfstream's overnight to come out. And then, of course, it takes another, couple of hours for the PPs to generate. So got a chance to look at what is a absolutely terrific Jeff Ruby Stakes card. The Bourbonette Oaks and the Animal Kingdom and the Rushaway and the Latonia. And it maiden races, and it, really, really good. And, we've said this from the start of the season at Florence, that, they've put together, card after card. Big fields. I mean, and I know some people find it confounding and very difficult, to wade through. And sometimes the Turfway results seem, mystifying. But I think that this card is really going to vie for attention. I know it's hard because, in fact, it's going to be somewhat overwhelming between Arkansas Derby Day, Florida Derby Day, and this. Florida Derby took some twists and turns, and part of that ended up being the news, unfortunately, for Eddie Barker and Iris Smith. They're hopeful. Shipsational. Got a problem and is going to need time off, and they're going to refocus for the second half of the year. So it felt bad for Eddie and company. There was also, didn't realize it leading up, but in due time, Mike Welch, when I inquired about in due time, he said the Kelly Breen had opted for the Northern Climbs, either Bluegrass or the Wood Memorial. So that's why you don't see in due time in there. But there were a couple of other names that, as you kind of expect and you see, a couple of names that weren't necessarily, on the lists that ended up participating, including Michael Yates with Stonehenge's Cajun's Magic. But let's get a couple of things in here before I start talking about the sale. And we're going to actually have a nice conversation, a congratulatory conversation with Tom McCrocklin. It was his day absolutely his day yesterday, and we'll detail that in a minute with the sale topper for $1.2 million, and in addition, a second big seller and a huge pinhook score. Both were nice pinhook scores. So we'll talk to Tom McCrocklin in about 15, 20 minutes. But a quick look at some of the highlights from these draws yesterday, and we'll start to wade into it. The Florida Derby came up like this with Strikehard, who really doesn't need to save all that much ground, although he's a horse that has gotten involved in pace, but most recently in the Mucho Macho Man and the Sam Davis try. That Sam Davis try, I'm going to have to go back and watch that again, especially, you know, with Classic Causeway being the, you know, the major part of the conversation and the handicapping exercise. But Strikehard may be a little obscured in here. He may be the something of the forgotten horse. 20-1 actually was 12-1 in the Sam Davis, where he ended up fourth, beaten six. Classic Causeway draws the two hole, and so Arad Ortiz will have no trouble gaining that early position and saving all the ground. 7-2 second choice, logically behind Simplification, coming off the Fountain of Youth win, and kind of a horse that is established himself as tactical and capable of being placed anywhere. You would think that Jose Ortiz will set up shop behind the pace as it unfolds. We'll get to other interesting parties that might cruise up and keep Classic Causeway company in a minute. But Antonio Sano back with Simplification, the Not This Time colt, out of the Fountain of Youth. King of Truth for Amador Sanchez, and going to be a rank outsider in here. And in fact, 50-1 off the allowance try. This is a horse that did face off against Strikehard back in December, but doesn't appear to be more than, you know, than I don't even want to say pace factor. He seems like a horse that when he's been successful, he did win breaking his maiden at Belterra on the lead, but he's got three placements subsequently, and they've all come kind of behind the lead. He's kept some good company. King of Truth, the presence of Papa Cap will certainly, it's going to certainly intrigue me, because I'm a fan, and the LeCompte effort, where it looked like he was rallying up inside and then, you know, kind of the backed out of it effort in the Risen Star. Papa Cap 10-1 in here from Mark Cassie and Russell Wood, the homebred, the gun runner. You would, and I'll say this, if Papa Cap, you know, doesn't take a step forward in here, I would think that Mark has got to think turf with him, being out of Papa Scat, the Scat Daddy mare. Charge It is one of the candidates to keep company and to apply pressure, and certainly it's where Luis Saez likes to go. Off the maiden win, going the mile, Charge It from the six hole, and 7-2 seems like a little aggressive pricing on Charge It to make him a co-second choice with Classic Causeway. So we'll see how the betting, where it flows, because outside of Charge It is White Abario 3-1, and actually White Abario is the clear second choice. Classic Causeway and Charge It co third choices, but White Abario back with Tyler Gaffleone from the Holy Bull, and it sure feels like, even after this 34-4 blowout on Tuesday, it feels like they had, you know, some issues post Holy Bull. So an important outing here for White Abario, who, you know, obviously only has to run, you know, well enough to garner some more points to get his, you know, his pass to Derby, but feels like he's got to kind of reestablish himself a little bit. It just feels like they were fishtailing a little bit the last couple of weeks with indecision about his participation. White Abario from the 7-hole, Cajun's Magic, I mentioned, Michael Yates, the Stonehenge Florida bred that really has put together, you know, a very nice record. 2 wins, 3 placements, and 6 starts, and you know, kind of ran evenly. It lost some ground in the stretch of the Holy Bull behind White Abario and Simplification and Mo Donegal. Ended up 5th that day, but he's made $250,000 and you know, really has not run a bad race. And of course, he spent, you know, good part of the summer and into the fall in the Florida Stallion Series. Jesus Rios aboard. Joel Rosario lands on O Captain, and Gustavo Delgado out of the Fountain of Youth. He's a horse that you got to respect. Delgado, he's had plenty of success and understands these 3-year-olds and what to, you know, how to get where they want to get. And O Captain. I don't know why I'm putting, why am I making him Capitan? Oh, Captain. the Carpe Diem out of the AP Indy Mare. Everything says that the mile in the eighth will be to his liking. And he arguably, you know, ran a sneaky good race in the Fountain. And the extra half furlong certainly feels like it'll be to his liking. And having Joel doesn't hurt either. Clapton for Juan Alvarado. Oh, Captain, by the way, 20-1, which is awfully attractive, at the very least as a exotic number. Clapton, the Brethren Colt for Arundel, and Juan Alvarado has been getting a steady diet of Florida breds, has not gone 2 turns since the In Reality last September. Feels like a question mark a little bit from a distance, even though he's out of a Fleet Alex mare. In fact, that Alexandra Riley, that name rings a bell. Clapton with Jaramillo, 30-1, and Steel Sunshine, Bobby DeBona. And this a little red feather, Kerry Brogdon partnership, Constitution Colt that Brogdon, the Macmer Hall bred. And a good second behind Skippy Longstocking, who will try the wood next week. So a field of 11 and a nice field of 11 for the Florida Derby with the unusual circumstance that brings together a Tampa Bay Derby winner, the Fountain of Youth winner, and the Holy Bull winner. Kind of cool, actually. And Charge It coming off of a win as well. And I think there was somebody else that it was coming, I think, coming off a win. Clapton was coming off a win, too. So it's there it is. There's your Florida Derby. The rest of the Gulfstream card, all the Florida Derby Day things that you anticipate, the Oaks, Goddess of Fire that Todd had mentioned, and Kathleen O for Shug coming out of the Devona Dale. Those are your two prominent players. The rest feel like they're going to have to take steps forward against this group, those two. And there is, Jonathan Thomas has got a maiden breaker. It's coming, that's also cross-entered in the Bourbonette. So we'll see what their decision is. Kind of interesting. And is down at Payson. So had won on the synthetic, broke the maiden on the synthetic at Gulfstream. So you can understand why he's at least considering sending this one up to an Airgate filly up to Turfway. The Appleton Wolfie's Dyna Ghost is back to confound everybody, right? It's actually a little bit of a different look, this group, to be honest. Some different names turning up in here. Shug's got Scarlet Sky making a four-year-old debut. Last seen on Boxing Day. Stu Janney. How about Roger Atfield? Gray's Fable. Same thing. Seasonal debut for a much older gelding. Gray's Fable. Brian Lynch for the Hills. Phantom Currency, who we haven't seen in over a year. How about that? Last seen winning the McDermott. Interesting group. Grand Motion with English B as well. And then, you know, so much more. The Ghost Sapper and Shug trying to pull things together with Greatest Honor after that disappointment in the Challenger. Fearless, though, for Todd. The Sand Springs and the Cutler Bay, etc. You got a big maiden race. The 8th, 7 furlongs, and 3-year-old fillies, the Pan Am. Guffo comes back, makes his 5-year-old debut. Going to have to deal with some makers, some mic makers, of course. You can't run turf routes without mic maker. The Sir Shack and what else? Sanibel Island, where Tina and I are headed, actually, in a few weeks. Tina today, by the way, she said, because I'm getting a new piece of equipment, and she said, did you order that equipment? I said, I got to do it today. And I said, because, you know, I'm going to need it, you know, while we're on vacation. She says, well, what do you mean? So Tina said, it's 3 weeks before Derby. I'm going on vacation with you. I'm not taking vacation those 5 days. I mean, yeah, she looked at me like I had two heads. I was looking at her like she had two heads. What kind of crazy? I thought you said, I never said that I wasn't doing shows that while we were away. She's, holy cow. Come on, honey. when it comes to Turfway, quick glance here before a couple of news hits and I reach for Tom McCracklin. The Jeff Ruby Stakes. And nice full field here with 1AE. In fact, Todd with Swing Shift did not get in, sitting on the outside, but might, you know, we'll see. He did get in with Royal Spirit on the inside, the second in the Kitten's Joy most recently. Stolen Base for Maker out of the Battaglia. Cabo Spirit for George Papa Padromo, who was kind of a distant fifth and disappointed in the San Felipe after, you know, being a distant second in the Lewis. Rich Strike for Eric Reed out of the Battaglia. Tawny Port for Brad Cox, last seen in the Risen Star at 24-1, was fifth, beaten 7. Great Escape, Rudy Brissett, who, you know, now suddenly is ripe with the live 3-year-olds. This a Midnight Storm that was second most recently at Oaklawn, behind Call Me Jamal. Tis the Bomb out of the Battaglia, and comes back and obviously will lead them from a favoritism standpoint for McPeak with Brian Hernandez Jr. Red Run, Steve Asmussen's Winchell participant. This a Winchell homebred, the Gunrunner. Last seen winning the Texas Turf Mile, actually, at Sam Houston. Classic Night, Ladies Classic Night. Amos sends up Dowagic Chief off the Black Gold win on turf, and probably going to get plenty of play Optagogo, Owen Hardy, sending this one in from California. Rafi Bejarano grabbed the call. Constitution lawyer, Ray Handel, did not go well. Things did not go well for him and the Withers, but had broken the maiden going a mile and an eighth. So distance-wise, makes some sense. Constitution out of a lawyer, Ron Mayer. And Blackadder, one of the SF, Starlight, Matticat, and Company runners that Rudy Brissett took over. Blackadder, Edwin Maldonado, comes to Kentucky to ride. So there's your Jeff Ruby, quite good, $600,000. And I tell you, purse-wise, this is a very, I think I added, what did I add it up? I want to say 1.7? Is that, I think 1.7 in purse money. And by the way, there's something, if you, this was one of the things that last night when I was waiting for the Gulfstream draw to populate, when I was going through the Turfway card, there's a horse in the first for Rudy Brissett that did not, was not featured in the stories about the horses that were transferred by SF and the team to Brissett because they focused on the stake horses. But here's a horse that obviously was with the Baffert string, whose name did not come up. It's an Uncle Mo that was a $300,000 purchase at Keeneland as a yearling, bred by Mount Brilliant, and out of a Lemon Drop Kid mare. So there's a little turfy, little turfy angle for the dam. Apologize. What is unbelievable about this debut in the first race at Turfway on Saturday? The horse's name is Blue Devil. So the Duke fans, hours before they take the court against, the archest of arch rivals in the semis of the NCAAs. Pretty crazy. A horse named Blue Devil makes a debut. So there's your hunch play for Saturday. All right. So top line to provide for you to get us going. We got plenty to do. We'll talk to Tony Black later. Tom Law is going to join us. Speaking of the NCAAs, he's going down to New Orleans for the weekend, for Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So we're all going to be, we will attempt to, clamp down the jealousy. we'll talk to Tom. As I reach for Tom McCracklin, I can tell you that, the sale was funny, and I'm curious about, listen, he had a great day, so he won't have any complaints, but of course, just in terms of the way things unfolded, there were only 35 head that actually sold yesterday. Quite a few outs, and there were quite a few RNAs. The numbers matched up with last year quite well. Tom McCracklin joins us, and Tom is driving back to Ocala.
Tom McCracklin is driving back to Ocala. Good morning, Steve.
Tom, very happy for you. Congratulations on obviously a special day.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
A lot of things happen, and there's certain confluences at a sale that come together for you. For you to have two enormous pinhook hits, including the sale topper, $1.2 million, representing Little Red Feather. In fact, when I was at Ocala at the OBS, Billy talked a little bit about the Solana Beach group that pinhooks. But then also for you, a huge hit with that Uncle Mo filly, 800,000. That is all you. Talk a little bit about how this happened.
Well, we have ventured into the world of pinhooking for the last 5 or 6 years, Steve, and it is basically speculating on a young horse and putting your money up and with the anticipation that the horse is a good athlete and will have commercial appeal at a 2-year-old in training sales. So it's investing on the short term. It's typically a 6 to 8 month turnaround, and what we do is we try to see as many horses as possible at the yearling sales, and then we take them to Ocala and we prepare them, and we bring them to 2-year-old in training sales and offer them to the buying public.
A couple of things about certainly the Uncle Mo. The Uncle Mo was one thing. I mean, that is a proven stallion, and I want you to talk about your selection there. But when it comes to the Bolt Doro, it was obvious, Tom, that at OBS, everybody I asked, who are you impressed with? Everybody said Bolt Doro, Bolt Doro. So some of this is also just the way in which a young horse develops for a stallion.
Well, he was a phenomenal racehorse, Bolt Doro was, and he was just tremendously talented, beautifully conformed horse physically, by Medaglia d'Oro. He had everything you would want in a stallion prospect, and I think people were very excited to see his offspring. And then once the yearling sales came, they were extremely popular. They sold very well. They were, for what I do, they were difficult to buy because they were expensive. So there's an old expression that you make your money when you buy your horse. So we bided our time, and we landed on this filly in the Keela September sale, and really liked her. Thought she was strong, athletic, balanced. And I was asked the question a lot in the last week, well, how did you buy this filly for $85,000? And to some degree, my answer was, well, she didn't really look like this in September. She got bigger, stronger, more athletic, and she just physically developed into a phenomenal horse. But at the end of the day, her greatest attribute is she's just very talented. She's a very fast horse.
About the middle of the sale, right?
Yes. She was hip. I believe she was hip 5'11". So she wasn't deep into the sale. And I've been doing it long enough where you realize that no matter what sale you go to, there'll be soft spots. And what do you mean by a soft spot? Well, horses just get overlooked. Keeneland's 4,000 or 5,000 horses, they're spread over a large amount of ground. And some horses just, for whatever reason, fall through the cracks. And every now and then, a guy like me, you get your turn, and you find that, diamond in the rough. So she wasn't by any means unattractive, but she just wasn't quite there yet.
Well, and that's another thing that contributes to the speculation. Taking a horse that you're going to anticipate where they're going to go by the time you're going to offer them again. How many prospects did you have when Fazy came and looked at your prospective consignment?
I actually showed Fazy Tipton 9 horses, and they actually accepted all 9.
Wow.
And I chose to bring 7 horses down to Miami. And it was well documented. There was a horse shortage down there this year, and there were some major consigners in Ocala that opted not to go down there this year. but I'm a big believer in Chase Tipton. I'm a big believer in Boyd Browning, and we've had success at the Gulfstream Sale in the past, and there was a chance I was going to miss the opportunity to go down there and sell some nice horses.
Well, $1.2 million on the $85,000 purchase last September, and if I'm not mistaken, what did I read? That actually that little red feather had bought that mare with this one carrying this one.
Yeah, it was kind of a little bit of a tricky situation. Little Red Feather at one point owned two foals out of Rich Love. They were putting together a little broodmare investment fund where you would buy a mare, have a foal, sell the mare, sell the foal. And I wasn't particularly involved in that, but I was familiar with Rich Love because I trained a horse named Tilted Towers, and I was very familiar with another filly out of Rich Love named Loving Moments, and they were both very fast horses. And one thing you need, Steve, when you go to a two-year-old training sale is you need speed. So I remember Tilted Towers, a very fast turf sprinter in Southern California. Loving Moment was a very talented filly. She just had some physical issues along the way that kept her from being a top horse. So I thought the mare on paper was a little bit deceptive. Her produce record did not really reflect how good a foal she put on the ground. So anyway, they sold the Bolt d'Oro filly is a weanling for $80,000. She had a little vet issue in her stifle, which is more of a developmental issue that oftentimes will go away with time. And by she was resold as she was sold as a weanling for $85,000, and she was resold as a yearling for $85,000. So at the end of the day, the person that bought her as a weanling and resold her as a yearling lost money, and we happened to be the beneficiary of their bad luck. So when I did my work at Keenan, I called Billy and I said, gonna buy this filly, do you want in? And we partnered up, and it's a very happy ending yesterday.
Well, to say the least, $1.2 million, and as you can tell, for those listening, it's getting involved with somebody like Tom who knows the ropes about all of this, and this is the formula and the anatomy of a success, of a big hit.
Well, it can happen. It can happen, and it's really all about the horse. I often liken it to a chef preparing a meal. You better start with a good product. That's number one.
Yep.
Two, they need to be meticulously prepared, and then three, timing. You know, the chef has to bring the meal to the table at the right time. And with presentation, and we have to do the same with the horse. It's not like the racetrack where they're going to write this race back in 3 weeks. We have to show up on a particular day at a particular time, and you don't have any excuses. There's not tomorrow or the next condition book's coming out. So it's a high wire act. It's a lot of pressure, but when things go well and you hit the bullseye, you're rewarded greatly financially.
Well, and how obvious was it that she was going to be, one of the top sellers from the breeze through, the showing period?
Well, I think once she breezed, she identified herself as one of the better horses on the grounds, if not the best horse on the grounds. And I was very confident in the filly. But when you're dealing with fifths of a second, 20-2, 20-3, 20-4, you're talking about a very fine line there. But her scoping of her airway and her radiographs, the x-rays of her joints were all very good, and she was physically a beautiful horse, and she just displayed a phenomenal amount of talent on the racetrack. She actually had the fastest quarter mile breeze ever on a dirt racetrack at a 2-year-old in training sales. So, I mean, I'm a big believer in let the horse do the talking. I'm not going to talk anybody into buying a horse. The horse is going to sell themselves.
Talk about your philosophy and your approach when it comes to an eighth and a quarter with your prospects.
Well, we've gravitated, Steve, to where most of the consigners now, they breeze an eighth of a mile. And I'm not knocking the guys that do it, but I believe a quarter of a mile breeze is a little bit of a visually more attractive breeze. The pace is not so frenetic. Sometimes I feel like when you go an eighth of a mile, the horses are scrambling a little bit and they really can't get their coordination straight, and it's a lot of pressure on them. I think going a quarter of a mile, they can actually fall into a little bit of more of a stride rhythm that's a little more natural for a thoroughbred versus a quarter horse. And I like it better. At the end of the day, I like it better. I'm a little bit of an outlier when it comes to that. Most people don't breeze quarters, and most people question, why am I breezing quarters? But there's a method to the madness.
Well, it gives a chance for people to see a lot more about the horse, and I have no, you know, I have no issue. I to me the eighth is almost silly. There's not going to be any demand for a horse to go, you know, anything around 10 flat for an eighth of a mile the rest of their careers. And so, pushing them to do it, so that they've got one of the fastest breezes at the show.
I think what you're saying is it's more information, and we're giving the buyer more information. And I often say, watch a horse race, let them break from the gate, freeze your video after an eighth of a mile, and tell me who the winner is.
Yeah. I'm going to guess, and this is something that I imagine certain buyers keep track of. If you're developing them to perform over the quarter, it feels like you probably have a better chance for the horse to be successful long term in their career, and that's how you basically build a clientele. I mean, I was walking around OBS, 2 weeks ago, and you hear the explanation or the suggestion, he develops a nice horse, or they sell a nice horse. You want a horse that you don't necessarily have to win first out in May or June. I mean, you want a complete product.
Well, I am extremely flattered. I can't describe how flattered I am that an operation like Spendthrift Farm, you're talking about a world-class thoroughbred operation with unlimited resources that focus on the very best. And Eric and Ned from Spendthrift were, again, I can't explain how flattered I am that they basically bought $2 million worth of horses from me yesterday. It is to some degree a testimonial that they believe in what we do with our horses and how we prepare them. And there's a level of confidence that they can walk into my barn and buy a top racehorse.
Well, and we'll talk about the $800,000 colt as well here. You mentioned $2 million, 1.2 for the filly, $800,000 early in the sale, hip 21, the Uncle Mo colt out of Lady Tappet. This was one that you bought at Saratoga for yourself for $250,000. So this is absolutely as big of a score for you as the $1.2 million seller.
He, In general, Steve, when you go to two-year-old and training sales and you want to attract world-class buyers, they tend to gravitate to colts with two-turn potential and pedigree. And he's obviously by a phenomenal stallion in Uncle Mo. He's out of a graded stakes place, Tappet mare. So he has, from a pedigree perspective, he has all the credentials to be a top two-turn horse in North America. And he could potentially fit into a stallion barn somewhere at a place like Spendthrift Farm. So, you know, places like Spendthrift and Windstar, and you get the guys like SF Bloodstock and China Horse Club, all those outfits, that's what these guys are looking for. They're looking for a horse that can go to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. They're looking for a horse that can go to the Kentucky Derby. So, again, you have to start with a good horse. And I can't go to Saratoga and buy a horse like him for any less than that, really. $250,000 is a lot of money. But having said that, it's not a lot of money for that particular physical horse with that pedigree. And that's my job, is to identify value. So I have to speculate, can I prepare this horse to the point where, you know, somebody's so attracted to him that they're gonna pay for him. And he really had a phenomenal breeze. Visually, his video was very impressive. He galloped out fast, and his vet work was pristine. He was a very sound horse. He showed himself well. He's a classy horse, and that's really what guys like Spendthrift Farm are looking for. So I'm very proud of the two horses, and it really begins and ends with a good horse. And then it's all about preparation. And what happens in the next 6 or 8 months between purchase and sale time is very important.
Well, and I'm just looking at the family here, and she herself, the dam, Lady Tappet, she just a one-time winner. Her first foal has not hit the races yet. This is her second foal, and this is really a horse you sense was purchased. Even with Uncle Mo, Tom, it feels like this is a purchase, you know, on the individual.
Yeah, and I think Steve, the purchase made sense at the time. He's a very nice horse, and again, you can go to a place like Saratoga. Saratoga Select Yearling Sale is a very intimidating place. There's a lot of sticker shock that goes on there, and you can really feel like you're in the wrong end of the pool. It's like being in a high stakes poker game and you don't have enough money. But if you just do your job, stay patient, identify value, opportunities will show up. So I think it's a plan that works. I've had a lot of success buying at Saratoga, and again, a face that tipped in venue. And I'll continue to go back there and buy more.
I'm also incorporating the results from OBS, and I'm looking down at the More Than Ready colt that you sold to West Point and David Berman, $200,000. Gary Contessa bought one for Earl Mack, a West Coast colt. One of West Coast had a very good sale up there. You had some private sales as well, and you got a big, what seems like a large consignment for April. And again, you got a little bit of everything, Tom. It feels like, you know, you really went into this season, you know, and not every one of these, I'm sure some of these are for clients, but, you know, talk a little bit about what you think this sales result and OBS March, what they pretend going forward for April and May.
Well, I think there's a lot of statistics that get involved, Steve, in this business. We read a lot of headlines. You know, the horses, the colt and the filly we discussed today, you know, they're superstar horses, but there's a lot else going on. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of investments where you lose some money. There's investments where it's a big wash. You break even at the end of the day. But I would liken it to a mutual fund. At the end of the day, it's all about our ROI. What's, you know, when you sit down at the end of the season and you do your math, how do we make out? And there's also a tremendous amount of expenses. It's a very expensive endeavor to take a group of horses to Miami. You're hiring sales help. You're putting them in hotel rooms or Airbnbs. You're providing transportation. There's a lot of veterinarian expenses. When we did a lot of therapy on these horses during the last 10 days in Miami, we have a young lady who comes in with a laser and a MagnaWave machine. So it's, you know, it's like a training room at an NFL team. You know, these horses are being worked on every day, massages, that kind of stuff. So you generate a lot of expense. And again, we all tend to read gross figures and we tend to read headlines, but there's a lot of expenses along the way. So the goal at the end of the day is, it doesn't make money, it doesn't make sense. But, you know, it's also a high-risk, high-return venture. So it's big boy horse business, and we try to do a good job with it.
Tom McCrocklin is with us, who had just one of those special days. It's amazing, Tom, that, and this sale is certainly a good place for it. The late J.J. Krupe, I can think of that big day of a couple of years ago. Kerry Frommer. Kerry had a mammoth sale at Gulfstream maybe 4 years ago as well. It seems like there's somebody in the spotlight every year at this sale.
Yeah, I always use the expression, sooner or later we all get our turn. It's a very competitive environment. When you have the opportunity to make $1 million in 8 months, people are attracted to the opportunity. It's a high-risk venture. You better have thick skin, because you're going to get your feelings hurt. You're going to get your butt kicked plenty of times. So you better be resilient. But if you do a good job and you buy a good horse and you have a client base that believes in your product and your preparation, you have days like yesterday where it all pays off. And there's a lot more to it for me than the money. Obviously, the money is what's on the scoreboard, but you know, personal satisfaction, having done a good job, having completed a good job. There's a lot of things that go into it. Peer recognition, you know, being respected by your peers that you're a good horse person. So there's a lot of satisfaction on a lot of different levels.
Tom, talk about your preparation and your evolution in the business and how you came to it.
Well, I came to it in a very unusual way. I grew up in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. No horses in my childhood, no people in my family in the horse business. I graduated from LSU with a business degree. I worked in the business world for a few years. Didn't like it. I actually was in Lafayette, Louisiana, and I stumbled on Evangeline Downs, small racetrack there in Lafayette. And, you know, we'd go there on Friday nights after work and watch some races, have something to eat, have some drinks, that kind of thing, and became fascinated with the whole industry. And still love the game, love handicapping, love betting on horses. Just really, I find it all just like I can't get enough of it. All horse business all the time. And then, I said, you know, I'd like to try to get into this. And I quickly learned that there's no real way to get into the horse business. You usually kind of just grow up in a family around it. So I actually went back to school to Louisiana Tech in North Louisiana. I got a degree in animal science, specializing in equine. And then after all that, after two college degrees, I wound up going to the backside in New York and to Aqueduct, and was rubbing horses and living in a tack room. So there were plenty of times where I second-guessed myself, what are you doing? What are you pissing your life away? But it is that old saying that if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life, and I very much see it that way.
Who'd you work for in New York?
I worked for, my first job on the racetrack was for B.G. Dunham, who still actually has some horses in New York. I actually went to, when I went to Louisiana Tech, I went to school with his daughter, Sarah, and she always said, she knew how much I loved horse racing. And she knew I was green and really had no idea. She'd grown up in a racing family. Her father was a trainer in New York. So she got me a job working for him, and he yelled at me every day for a few years. And then, but he's a good man. He's a good horseman. And he's a little older now and only has a handful of horses. But, the horses typically do all the teaching. If you work with them day in and day out for long enough, they'll teach you a lot.
In terms of gravitating to sales prep and starting young horses on their careers, how did that when I have somebody like Randy Bradshaw, for instance, where a lot of his contemporaries, went into the afternoon trade, and he gravitated in that direction. What kind of tipped your hand?
Well, I was kind of beaten up and down the East Coast with cheaper horses and owners that, I was having to put together two or three guys to claim a horse for $5,000, and I looked into the crystal ball and I said, you're gonna starve to death here. So and I still love the racetrack. I could still be at the racetrack training, but it's a tough game, and I think it's gotten even tougher now with the mega stables and the smaller outfits are struggling to keep their head above water. So at the end of the day, it was a lifestyle decision. I was tired of moving every 6 months, and financially I was going absolutely nowhere, so I moved to Ocala, and I had some interaction with Alan Jerkins, and he was a little bit of a mentor for me, and he said, move to Ocala and I'll see about getting you a job at Hobo Farm when he was training for Hobo. So I moved to Ocala. I showed up at Hobo Farm. Well, I quickly found out they had no job for me, because I think the people that were in place there were thinking I was looking to take their job. So I literally started in Ocala, and I broke one horse for a longtime friend of mine named Danny Pites, who's now at Oaklawn. And I got some breaks along the way. I was fortunate enough to buy some horses for Robert and Luana Lowe, and to this day I still break their homebreds, and they've been my clients for over 25 years now. And it's just something like a lot of things, Steve. It's word of mouth. Do a good job, send out a good product, and we don't typically advertise and all that kind of stuff, but again, we let the horses do the talking, and we've just grown and grown. Well, after a while, I realized that financially, you're not going to get rich training horses on the farm in Ocala. And I'm looking around me and I'm seeing some guys that are financially doing very well with the pin hooking thing. I still kind of cringe to this day. I don't really like to be called a pin hooker, because I still like to think of myself as a horseman and a horse trainer. But I see guys driving big trucks and living in nice houses. So I started paying attention, and I dabble in it a little bit on my own, scrape together a little money. And really, I wasn't very good at it. I found that what I was doing was I was overthinking. I was trying to train horses differently and do things differently. And then I was fortunate enough, Billy Koch and Gary Fenton with Little Red Feather, they put together a little pin hooking fund, and it was really the first time I had some real money to invest in nice horses, and it's just grown from there. I have other people that contact me on a frequent basis. I'd like to try this, and then success leads to more success.
Exactly. And it's one of the, really, it's a classic kind of a classic pattern and tail, Tom, of, you know, an overnight success over, what, 25
years? 35 yeah. years now. Yeah, I'm very proud to say I've paid my dues. I've slept in tack rooms. I've slept in my truck. I've shipped horses in the truck and trailer. I can remember shipping horses from Boston into New York City and winning races with guys like Jerry Bay. So, you know, a lot of moments along the way that give you a lot of satisfaction. And as you get older, you look back and you reflect and, you know, it's all good stuff. And then days like yesterday, you know, they're little landmarks that hard work pays off and persistence pays off. And I would tell anybody that you can do the same thing, but you better get tied on for a lot of hard work and a lot of ups and downs.
It's really so well said, and I know that, you know, that the conversation will resonate with all kinds of people that, you know, that are working in relative obscurity, whether they're, you know, whether they're working, you know, as assistants and foremen and you know, working for consigners and developers, it's a challenge for people that are buying, you know, young horses and trying to do what you did yesterday. You've absolutely got, you can just tell you've got the respect of, you know, some of the best people. Sid Fernando and I always, we kind of go through, particularly when we're looking at new stallions, and we're always curious to see who's, you know, who's buying who. And, you know, and all the names that you've included just really speak to, you know, the kind of horseman you are and the way you approach the game.
Well, thank you very much. It's much appreciated. And, again, the respect of the buyers and my peers, fellow horsemen, it's important to me, and it keeps you jumping out of bed every morning trying to do a good job.
Well, a $2 million day, and those were not the only horses that you sold yesterday. I'm certainly not going to let you go without giving you a chance to highlight a couple of the consignment for April at OBS. Who's you know, who do people have to see when they come down in a couple of weeks?
Well, we have some nice horses. We have a very nice American Pharoah filly. We have a very nice American Pharoah colt. We have a very nice Malibu Moon colt, and we have a very nice Gunrunner filly. We have a really nice Malibu Moon colt. So we have a nice Spikestown colt. So we feel like we've got some quality stallions there, and it's, you know, it's a pleasure to work with horses with that kind of pedigree. And, you know, I feel like I'm jumping out of the fire back into the frying pan. I'm going to get one day to breathe a little bit, and I'll be back at it in the morning trying to accomplish the next task. But please come see us and come look at our horses. We appreciate it.
Well, and I'm just looking at the list. In addition to the ones you mentioned, there's a City of Light, a Calbred. There's a Calbred Liam's Map. That's a colt. The City of Light is a colt. You got a New York bred. That New York bred, actually, that Hal Dane, I think there's a sibling right now, isn't there?
Yes. And I apologize, the name escapes me right now, but belongs to a man named Jim Nolan from New York, and it's by War Dancer. It's owned by Robin Martinelli, and so, you know, I thought his offspring had done very well in New York so far. From a small sample, they seem to be a little more turfy in two turns, but he's also had a couple of very nice dirt horses there. So we have a mix. I always tell people April at OBS is like Walmart. Find a little of everything. So whether your budget is limited or unlimited, you can buy a really good horse there at OBS in April. And it's very much like Keeneland in September. You better get your walking shoes on, because you're going to have to cover a lot of ground and watch a lot of videos and pay attention. But if you keep your head down, keep moving, you might have a lot of success.
Well, the Breeze Show comes up in a couple of weeks. In fact, the catalogs just arrived. I think over the weekend, and I'm gonna tell everybody the specifics because it's right on my desk here. The Breeze Show start on April 10th, so under 2 weeks already, and goes to the 16th, and then the sale, the 19th to the 22nd, right ahead of everybody coming to Derby, and
The thing about OBS April is you really have every buyer on the planet. You have people from Australia, Japan, Europe. I mean, basically anybody in the horse business worldwide, Dubai, Kuwait. I've sold horses that have wound up going to Macau, so Hong Kong, Korea. So, I mean, really, when you have 1,200 horses there, you're going to get a worldwide representation of buyers, and you know there's a lot to choose from. And if you leave OBS April without a horse, then you probably haven't tried hard enough.
Well, I'm going to also mention another New York bred, an Army Mule for everybody at Hillendale, and this is a colt out of that very. I remember Fire Assay. She was a nice Medaglia d'Oro mare.
Yes, big scopy colt. He's trained very well, very classy, moves really well on the racetrack, so we have high hopes for him.
Well, Tom, it's already a great spring after two-year-old sales, and there's still OBS to come, and then Timonium. Will you have anything at Timonium?
I will be at Timonium. I've got a consignment there, so we've got our work cut out for us for the next 2 months.
Well, it'll be easier. It'll be easier to push forward after yesterday.
Yes, it certainly puts a little air in your tires and gives you a little pep in your step. So we're gonna march on and go to the next stop.
Well, Tom is on Twitter. You don't seem very active, but I know I follow you. I don't know if you want.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I'm usually so tired. I'm too tired to get on social media. I should probably do like a lot of these guys and have somebody help me with that. But I got plenty to say and I got plenty of thoughts. I just sometimes I'm too tired to put it in public.
Well, I'm gonna put your Twitter handle out there, and we're gonna get you up from the 9 followers, and we're gonna force you to do some advertising and some communications work. Tom, well done. Congratulations. Thanks so much for this. I really enjoyed this.
Steve, thank you. I enjoyed it too. Anytime. Thank you very much.
Tom,
have a good day.
You too. Tom McCrocklin, everybody, and a mammoth score. I mean, the kind of day that when you're in this business that you dream about, and you can, I think you can tell how modest he is. And actually, I didn't even give him the other credit. You know, he mentions how much he likes to play, bet on horses. He has got, from what I understand from people that would be in the know, that he's got a great opinion and a very savvy horse player. So, Tom McCrocklin. And if you want to follow Tom, it's McCrocklin Tom. Just put his name in. And he's only got 9 followers, so we have to up that. And we got to get, he can probably put a picture of the $1.2 million seller, you know, in his, because right now there's nothing. There's no, he's got no picture of anything. So we're gonna make him a social media player. Top of the hour is upon us. We zipped through, and actually Jessica Martini, who I'd reached out to, Jess had to get on a plane, so we can't get some other conversation in from her about the sale. So I'll touch on a couple of the big successes, and certainly the Justify Colt, Tom's filly, $1.2 million, the sale topper. There was one other 7-figure seller, the $1.1 million Justify that Coolmore bought, Jamie McCalmont signing the ticket for Coolmore. 1.1 out of the wonderful and the ongoing production of Appealing Zophie. who just is a going concern. And was a terrific horse in her own right, and she just continues to attract. I don't know how many, you know, she's got to be getting up there, actually, I would think, as well. The Dam of Taprit, most notably, and has had other. She's had other nice babies, obviously has already managed to produce a stallion and a classic winner in Taprit. So appealing Zophie's Justify colt, $1.1 million for Coolmore. A couple of other big ticket items. How about $900,000? West Point and Lane's End came together for the Medaglia d'Oro colt. That was a $225,000 yearling. This is a Hartley DiRenzo product that was bred by Don Alberto out of Baffled, out of the very nice Baffled. There we go. So $900,000. So almost a third seven-figure seller. And I don't have the Breeze right in front of me, but of course she's also a Baffled, is also a producer. She got, who did she get? Constitution, I think. Constitution. There you go. Yeah, Constitution. Florida Derby winner. Right on time, right? And he, you know, it's possible the Constitution was the last Don Handicap winner. When did the Pegasus get going? Because he won the Don in 2015. I'm going to guess there was... That might have been the last Don. That might have been the last Don Handicap in 2015. $800,000 for the Uncle Mo that Tom sold colt. How about $700 for the Nyquist that Gary Young bought for Amer Zadan? This one, a Calbred. Bud Petrosian bred this out of Soul Crusader, was a $275,000 yearling, so nice score there. And how about a $700,000 Run Happy colt out of Sue's Good News, Kress Ran bred. Donato Lanny signed the ticket for Frank Fletcher on that one, $700. And there was a 690 Into Mischief filly, second highest seller among the fillies that Jacob West signed for the Lowe's. There you go, Bob and Luana Lowe buying this one. And Tom explaining that they're clients of his. This is an Into Mischief out of Vaudevillian, $690,000. So there's the top line. The actual number of horses under gavel, I think, was 35. Is that the right number? 35. 52 went through the ring, and so 17 RNAs, but a good portion of the catalog also, you know, there were quite a few outs as well. So, but the numbers, interestingly, the numbers last year, they sold 67, so almost twice as many, and the average and the median were virtually identical. So basically, kind of the same. Boyd said it point blank, and you heard Tom echo it just now. I mean, they acknowledged that it was a narrow catalog. Plenty more two-year-olds where these came from, and reassemble at OBS in just a couple of weeks, really, as Tom McCracklin kind of indicated. We'll take a break here, Case. Let me know when we can step away, when you're ready for me to step away. And there it is. We're very, very steadily, we're bringing back all the services and all the bells and whistles. It's been a time, and I know people have been frustrated with the on the stream. Casey continues to experiment and work through a variety of technical aspects that he's trying to pin down. So bear with us on that front. Tony Black is going to join us. Tom Law, as mentioned. Rich Eng, and more. I think there's an expectation. I'm not sure if we've locked him in yet. But there's a chance that Drew Forster, Grant's brother, is going to join us. I have not yet had a chance to pay tribute to Glenn Todd, who passed away over the weekend, and one of the really outstanding horsemen of the Pacific Northwest, north of the border, especially. And Grant's brother, Drew, has worked for Glenn Todd, and in fact was with Glenn and the family over the weekend. So I think Drew will pay tribute. And we also have to talk about John Swenson, a fascinating writer, a sports writer, a horse racing fan and sports writer, and covered the Rangers and covered racing for UPI and for the Forum and the Post, but is most known as one of the most important music critics in music criticism history, to be honest. So John will pay tribute to him as well. Let's step away. We'll come back. Tony Black next.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Nationally recognized for making stallions since 1933 and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading freshman sire, Mosler by Warfront, as well as Divining Rod, Frisian Fire, and Super 99. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to...
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the...